Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast, episode 273, Ranking the Pixar Sequel Age.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties, because it's time to dive into today's episode.
Hey there, animation addicts. I'm Morgan Stradling.
And I'm Chelsea Robson.
And we are back at it again, talking about the entire Pixar canon. We are finally to the beloved, the masterful, the amazing sequel age of Pixar.
Oh, gosh.
Where oh so many
like,
of the
what
films.
What age are you talking about? Did I miss the memo here?
I'm being a bit sarcastic there, but nonetheless, here we are, and we are going to talk about it. This is one of the bigger ages. It spans 2011 to 2019. And there were quite a few films coming out. A few came out during the same year, which is pretty exciting because we had never seen that before for Pixar. So let's jump right into it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
The Pixar sequel age. We have had sequels up until this point. They were just Toy Story sequels. Just amazing, if you ask me.
Right.
But those didn't count because they just fell into a different age and they were just oh so good. But then Pixar was bought out by Disney. Now, that happened in the golden age. That happened in 2007. So kind of in the middle of that one. But it takes a few years for these films to come down the pipeline. And one can assume that Disney had something to say with the sequels.
Oh, one assumes.
Pixar really wasn't into sequels before, and then suddenly they have 5 out of these 10 films in this decade are sequels. Six out of ten. That the studio heads, the new bosses, had something to say. Just a hunch. So let's talk about these films. Like we said, it's 2011 to 2019. And we're kicking it off 2011 with Cars 2, directed by John Lasseter.
I don't know where this one came from. I mean, the first Cars film, fine. But then this one with the whole Mater side story and like the, it was just, you're trying to be 007. Like there were so many things wrong with this movie that I just could not ever get behind it. I saw it one time and that was enough for me.
Yeah. You know, I think this was purely a merchandising marketing ploy.
Because I can feel that. Yes.
The film was okay.
That feels right.
Yeah. And the film, the real legacy of Cars was just the merchandise and how these little cars and all of the different merchandise just was everywhere. Every little kid had these little figurines and these little mini cars. It just did so well for Pixar that they wanted to keep that going. You know, it's not that you need a new movie to keep selling the franchise and keep selling, because you could, even today, you can go into Target and there's a car section. But it doesn't hurt to have a new movie with new characters and all new, to quote Mason, all new friends, all new songs. That there were no songs, but no. All new locations, right?
Right.
There were new things, right? And so they decided, you know, let's do this. And so let's compare Cars to Cars 1. Cars 1 had a budget of $120 million and global box office $461 million. Cars 2 upped the ante with a $200 million budget and really didn't do that much better, maybe $100 million better, with $559 million worldwide. So it's still successful.
Yeah.
Still did really well. Not, you know, it's not Up quality or Finding Nemo, if you will.
Right.
Or even Toy Story, which had come prior, which goes to show that Pixar definitely has some clout. People are going to show up. We'll talk about this a little later, maybe not for some of these other ones. But at this point, Pixar really had some clout that majority of what was, it was going to hit 500 million no matter what.
Yeah, I don't know what else. And at this point in time, we hadn't gone through the sequel era. Like, we didn't know that this era was upon us. And so we were willing. The only other sequels that they had done was Toy Story. And so we were more than willing to jump in on whatever they were doing because they had, up to this point, a great track record.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah, let's look at the tomato meter for all of the Pixar films.
I feel like this episode is just going to be like me being really upset.
And me trying to, like, let's look at the positive.
Okay, so which is normally the contrary.
Okay. So looking at the tomato meter, I'm looking at an article that ranks the current 26 Pixar films. And lo and behold, 24, 25, and 26 are all Cars. Shocking.
Oh.
So Cars has a 74%. Tomato meter, and it's certified fresh, surprisingly.
Now, is that audience or is that critical?
I'm just looking at critics. Audience was similar, around 79.
Okay.
So they're pretty aligned. I mean, even Lightyear did better than Cars, which is shocking. So then Cars 2 comes in a total dud. 39% critical, 49% audience. 39% for a Pixar. No other Pixar film is rotten. Zero. Except for Cars 2. And it's just bad. It's this, they go around the world. There's these three races that they have to do. Mater wants to be like the world champion. And so we got this. And like you said, there's the storyline with Mater. Mater wants to be a world champion? Lightning McQueen wants to be a world champion. And, you know, Mater's involved. And I just think of that weird sushi scene with Mater. And it's, it's odd. It's too much. It's too much of Mater. I think it was like the Mater show.
Yeah.
He was funny as a sidekick, but as kind of one of the main guys, just no good. No bueno. So that is Cars 2. It happened. And we thought they were done. So much so that we did an April Fool's article. We used to always on the website do an April Fool's article every year. Ha ha, this is so funny. This would never happen. Cars 3 has been greenlit. And lo and behold, a few years later, they did it. We will talk about that. So put a pin. In that Cars 3 joke.
We'll be back. not too distant future.
So next up is Brave 2012, directed by Brenda Chapman and Mark Andrews. And I mean, even then, Brenda Chapman left midway through, but she still got the director credit.
Right. And then later on, co-directed by Steve Purcell. So he jumped in on that one. The thing is about Brave is this is at the very beginning of the Rotoscopers Animation Addicts podcast. And so I just remember, like, we were all super excited about it just because it was Pixar. So we were still on the high of, like, okay, we'll give them one
fail. Everything they do turns to gold, except for Cars 2.
Except for Cars 2. we'll just forget that shadowy place. I feel like this time I just remember, we did like this was one of our mistakes. It's like, oh, because we got the press screening, and so we'll do a non-spoiler review and then a spoiler review after the fact. And it was, yeah, we learned very quickly not to do that.
That was the only episode we did that for. Basically there on out, it was like, hey, we're talking about the movie. We're talking about the whole movie. So see the movie before you watch the podcast.
The reason why we did that is because we had done that for Wreck-It Ralph. And because Wreck-It Ralph...
Well, the test screening.
Right. But we didn't realize the difference. Like, so...
Yes.
It was... Yeah. It's one of our lower listen to episodes. But this was... It was
learned our lesson and we evolved.
Yes. As we should. Patrick Doyle on the... I think this is one of the first times that they brought him in on the soundtrack. I just love Patrick Doyle. The man knows how to ride a waltz. This is his background too, so his culture. So it was just, I like the soundtrack to this one. It's fun.
Yeah, this one's interesting. It's their first sort of princess film, which they never really were this fantasy brand. They had these other films that, you know, were fantasy, but not. They were just whimsical in a way. More whimsical versus fantasy. And so it was kind of the first one that had songs. Well, maybe not. They, you know, Toy Story and whatnot had songs, but this has no one singing songs. But there are a few songs in here that are memorable and noteworthy. But it just didn't really hit the way I think we were hoping. Like going back, I don't want to go back and watch Brave too much. You know, then the mother turns into a bear, and there's all of those shenanigans that happen, and there's the witch. Right. I think we were a bit looking forward to this more than it actually delivered. You know, critical consensus, 79%. And as far as how it did in the box office, $185 million, so less than Toy Story 3 and even Cars. But it did $538 million, so even worse than Cars 2. Better critically, but as far as audiences, it just didn't have that pull to really take it to the next tier, which I think is like the 700 million tier and beyond.
Oh, does that all?
We will get there. So speaking of 700 million tier, we have Monsters University 2013, directed by Dan Scanlon. That film did $743 million worldwide. This is the second sequel in the sequel age. And it's our favorite buddy film. One of our favorite. I mean, Pixar does a lot of these, but who doesn't love Mike Wazowski?
Mike and Sully, yeah.
This one has an 80% rating compared to the first one, which, I mean, you can expect 96% for the first one. The films during that classic era and even the part of the golden age, just so, so good. So good. You know, I remember being excited for this one and thinking that it was going to be, you know, a little different. And I think it has a really good story, but it's not one that I necessarily want to go back to. I'd say the biggest lasting impact of this movie is that MU hat. You still see that all over the place. Yeah. You see that at Disney World, Disneyland, both people love to wear that MU university hat. I think it's just so funny. That's the number one merch. I mean, they couldn't really get a lot of toys out of this one. You could, but not like Cars. But that hat, who knew? The hat was going to have longevity.
Right. So at this point, they had done one per year. And then 2014, there was nothing. We will find out later why. But then 2015, we come out with Inside Out. And that is Pete Docter with co-directed by Ronnie Del Carmen. And I think Inside Out was it was kind of like a revert to what we had expected from these Pixar films. I just remember it being a huge win in my book of being like, wow, this was really in depth. It really was almost like going to therapy a little bit. So it was like they did a good job.
I recently introduced my kids to Inside Out and they love it. My son is just so inquisitive and do we really have those things inside our heads? And you know, you got to explain that it's just a representation, but we do have those emotions and the long-term memory is a thing. And, you know, core memories he loves to talk about. And but this is one that they have requested to watch. This is like their new Toy Story. They love this movie.
Their new go-to.
Yeah. But I don't let them watch movies over and over and over again. I like to expand their horizon. So I have a list of all the Disney canon and we check off so they can watch them all. I need to do one for the Pixar canon. But yeah, they really enjoy this. I remember this came out. It was just so, the soundtrack on this, phenomenal. It's just so simple with the piano. Mm-hmm. I believe it's Michael Giacchino.
It is.
But directed by Pete Docter. It just has such a whimsical melody. And it's kind of like a When She Loved Me moment from Toy Story 2. It's this, these darn growing up movies. You know, it's sad to see this preteen era is really when changes are happening and you're kind of letting go. So it's just always sad for me to see Goofy Island, you know, which is she's this goofball. And it's one of her core parts of her personality just crumbles and it never comes back. It's like, no, it's like what they say with your kids. Like, you'll never know the last moment that you pick up and hold your child or snuggle with your child in bed.
Oh, I don't even have kids. That makes
me
so sad.
The last time that you'll push them in a stroller, like these mundane things that just happen day to day. But there will be a moment in time where it's like, this is the last time I do this.
Yeah.
And I'll never do it again. But at the time, it wasn't momentous. It just happens. And that's how I think about Inside Out. It's like this transition. She's turning from, you know, a little girl into a teenager. And part of growing up is just letting go childish things, even though she's still a child, but like the super childish things, right? So like Bing Bong.
Yeah.
The memory of Bing Bong is of being this imaginary friend is gone forever. And it's, and then I just love the gag of the triple mint gum.
It's still in there. They're so, I still have those songs in my head. Oh, Free Rent.
So anyways, this is a great movie as far as how it did in the box office. $175 million budget, $857 million. So Pixar is back. And you can see when they have these original, cool, unique concepts that just executed to, like a fine wine to perfection.
Yeah.
They do really, really well. I mean, up until this point, other than Finding Nemo and Toy Story 3, this is the third highest grossing Pixar film to this point. Not surprised because it's so good. As soon as I was watching this again with my kid, it'd been years. I was like, oh, this is really good.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. So the reason why there was nothing in 2014 was because it was the second film of 2015, The Good Dinosaur, which had so many issues as far as like in production. The movie itself, I don't remember being all that involved, like emotionally drawn to this movie, but I know that my nephew, who's about the same age as your son, he loves this movie and it's one of his favorites.
Oh, interesting.
And he's just like, oh, I got to get my dinosaur, you know.
Well,
and it could just
be like
the dinosaur thing.
It's like those kids who like Land Before Time 6. If you grow up with a certain thing and quality isn't even a factor.
That's true.
Like, but I loved it. It was so good. Yes. Yep. And that's why you're not allowed to vote.
Yeah. I look at the process of this and I still am very upset that they just skipped out on so many different possibilities with the art book.
I feel like when we first heard about this film, what we were sold, or at least how I perceived this film to be, was what if the asteroid didn't kill the dinosaurs, right?
Yes.
And so in my mind, if they weren't killed, the asteroid never hit the Earth. And so they never died. They never were extinct. Dinosaurs are still here today among us. What would that world be like? To me, that's the interesting world. That's what I'm interested in. It was a cool concept. It was like, oh, wow, there's cars driving around and there's dinosaurs walking around and the people and dinosaurs are living together. Cool. And then that's not what this ended up being at all. It just ended up being kind of like a prehistoric dinosaur film. They had evolved to the point where they were farmers and then they have a pet human.
Right.
I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at on Wikipedia. It says that this is the original concept and development was by Bob Peterson.
He directed the film until August 2013. It was supposed to come out 2014.
Right.
And then at 2013, they said, no, this isn't working. And we're going in a different direction. And so that it gets pushed a year and then they have to retool the story.
My point is that I feel like he probably came up with the idea of what if dinosaurs never, and then it just didn't, they weren't able to quite get it past that point. And so when we were hearing about it, we were still hearing his pitch, but then it probably moved over to something else, which is like, here's something completely different. So
75% certified fresh, surprisingly. I'd imagine this would be lower, but audiences didn't love it as much, 64%.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that. Now let's move on to the last five of these films out of the 10. Four of the five are sequels. So we have Finding Dory, came out in 2016, directed by Andrew Stanton. Now, Finding Dory had been long awaited in a way. $200 million budget and did phenomenally well, as did the first one.
Uh-huh.
This one did just less than Toy Story 3, $1.28 billion with a B, dollars. So people were excited to come back to this ocean.
The Ellen Army right here.
Wow. I wish I'd like to have that much clout. Now, this has a 94% ranking on Rotten Tomatoes. This is 14 out of 26, which is, it's like the bell curve for Pixar is skewed so much toward the nearly 100% critically acclaimed. Their films are so good. So even though it's a 94%, which is incredible, it's still 14th, like kind of middle of the pack, if not slightly less. 84% audience score. And for another day, I do feel like in the past 10 years, the critical assessment of films and the audience has really diverted.
They used
to kind of be aligned. But now I feel like the critics are kind of just their own thing over there. They're either pandering or they're wanting to, oh, it's so good. It's an artsy film. It's a this film. So it's so good. When the audiences are like, what are you talking about? That was trash. Not saying about this film, but that's a discussion for another day.
I mean, it could also be polarization
of critics.
We'll leave it at that. So moving into Cars 3. So we said, put a pin in it. We're back.
We're back, baby. Brian Fee, 2017. Now we're back at the bottom of the list as far as the Rotten Tomatoes goes. 25 out of 26.
But not
the
worst.
You didn't think you could get it. Not the worst, but not. So 69% critic, 69% audience. They were aligned there. So, you know, not always the case. But I mean, this one's just bad all around. It's not certified fresh, but it's not quite moldy, but it's freshish.
Yeah.
And as far as how much this did, you know, Cars, the engine was running out of gas. So they had $175 million budget and only did $383 million. At this point, we'd already been disappointed by Cars 2. And then Cars 3 was just like, well, what are we doing here, guys?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I mean, we had already joked about it. Like this was the joke that they would do this. And that they were so entrenched in the Disney, let's just wring out as much money as we can out of these properties. And we were joking about this, thinking, oh, yeah, you know, obviously they're going to be doing a Cars 3 next. You weren't supposed to be following our cues as like. We joke about how they bought up Anastasia and then they actually buy it. And then they do Cars 3 and then they actually do it. I'm like, we're doing these as a joke because you shouldn't do
it. Because we don't want these. It's a bad thing if the world has come to this point. Pixar's like, hey, that's not a bad idea.
Well, we should do that. See, the fans want
it. See, the people
want
it. They wrote an article about it.
I think that's also one of those where it's like the internet versus the corporate heads and they don't understand each other. And this is really what
it's
happens.
It's like people. Yeah. Yep.
Well, moving into Coco, I actually loved Coco. So
this
was one of those that brought me back to my being like, you know what, Pixar, I feel like you have at least done better. You know, you're kind of bringing us back out of this a little bit. So thank you.
Pixar or Coco, $175 million budget. So it seems to this point, basically from WALL-E on, they've really, this $175 to $200 million range is what a Pixar movie costs.
Yes.
The budgets aren't continuously going up. It's like, this is what it is. And even today, I mean, the highest we've ever seen is $200 million. Like, that's where it's capped. We're done, folks. $175 million seems to be the new, like, if you're making a Pixar movie, that's how much it's going to cost. Now, it did $807 million in the box office. So up until this point, I believe this is the fourth highest, uh, fifth not including Toy, it's the fourth highest, and Toy Story 4 will come in. So it's fifth of all time. But yeah, that's what it is. And I like it a lot. I love the music in this.
Yes.
I think the music is so good. They brought in Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez, not for all of the songs, but just for Remember Me, mm-hmm. which Remember Me is such an interesting song because there's about four different versions of it, depending right. on who's singing it. And it's, which is really cool that it has these different meanings based on who it's being sung to or who's yeah. singing. And it's so tender and I love it. And I love the other songs in there. Un piquiquiquito loco. I love listening to that song a lot.
Yes.
So it's a good one.
I did a YouTube review of this movie, and it's one of my highest viewed YouTube reviews. And I don't know if it's because I start off singing or something, or if it was just the fact that everybody really liked this movie and therefore shared it a lot. I don't know.
Los dos.
So I think I look at the fact that it has like over 30,000 views or something like that, which is not a lot in by many standards. But for our standards, it was quite a bit for just a random movie review. And
yeah.
It was just, I still think about that as being like, really? Her?
This movie was funny because this was my son's first movie. He had just turned a year, and we always go see a movie at Thanksgiving. And unfortunately, he's very well behaved, but this movie had Olaf's Frozen Adventure in front of it.
And it's like 30 minutes.
The canceled TV special that they decided to shoehorn in as a short in front of a Pixar film. It just didn't make sense. And we remember the drama about this. They had to put signs at the ticket booth and in front of the theater. Be like, FYI, there is a 30-minute Frozen short before this movie. So we get there early. He's okay. By the time this short is over, he has lost it and he is done because he is 1 year old. What are you expecting?
Yeah.
So my mom took him out and I took him out partially. So that was my theater experience, unfortunately. But they, why? I just like, really? You couldn't? Like nowadays, they would have thrown that on Disney Plus and called it a day.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, really, you couldn't just find some random time slot and put it there? Like, if anything, it's made. Just, I don't know. I don't know how it all works, but that did not work. Okay, two more. It's not The Incredibles. It's just Incredibles 2, 2018, by good old Brad Bird, my man. This movie blew everything out of the water.
As far as money-wise.
As far as money-wise, yeah. $200 million budget. And $1.242 billion with a B.
Gosh.
This is the highest grossing Pixar film of all time. I mean, I feel like this in 2019, obviously, anything pre-2020 was like we were hitting the pinnacle of these like massive box office.
Yes.
And we're struggling to get back there. But Toy Story 2 or Incredibles 2, it had so much potential because it was one of the most requested. Like, we got to have a sequel because it basically ends and tees up a sequel.
Right.
But it was okay.
I mean, you can go back and listen to our full reviews on this, but I'll just say I just felt like it was a gender swap that didn't work out. It was just like the same movie again. Just now it's her instead of him. And there's so many things that it could have dug into, but it just didn't. And it felt lazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it is, I guess.
Yeah, the critics absolutely loved it, 97%. So this is 9 out of 26 on the rankings chart. Audiences were not as high on it, 75%, but that didn't matter because people still showed up in droves anyways.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love a good superhero movie? I mean, that was the 2010 decade was the decade of superheroes.
Right.
And hey, why not Incredibles 2? Throw it in there because it didn't matter whether they're animated or not. People went and saw it. So
yeah,
that is that. And next up, this is the final film of the Pixar sequel age. And this is Toy Story 4, which was another one we were, you know, the dog with its head tilted to the side. Why do we need this? It ended so perfectly. That was like the number one talking point online. Is the trilogy was perfection. It ended on the highest, best note possible with lots of tears, obviously, in the audience as a result. Why are we doing this again? Oh, yeah, the money.
Oh, right. The money. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Continue money. On. Yeah. $200 million budget and did $1.073 billion.
Gosh.
Now, as far as, you know, how critically acclaimed it was, it 97% critic consensus, which me at this point, I'm starting to think like, really? Her?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can trust you, but audiences loved it to 92.
Yeah, it's definitely higher than some. Which is weird.
Audience
score on this one is higher than audience score on Up. I don't understand that.
Who doesn't love Toy Story? Maybe that's what it comes down to.
Maybe, I guess. Gosh, I have so many problems with this movie.
On our episode, this movie came out and we talked about how we just didn't like it. And it was kind of shocking at the time because I think a lot of people did. But then we have gotten tons of emails and feedback of people saying, I feel the exact same way that you do about Toy Story 4. Like, thank you for saying that. I was like, of course, I'm just going to say what I feel.
I still think the best way to fix this is to not turn Woody into some type of forced organ donor. Let him have his voice box back, and then also make the little girl at the end deaf so that she and the little doll are meant for each other. That would have made everything so much better, and I would have forgiven most everything about this movie. I would have forgiven it. I'd be like, you know what? It worked out. But nope, Woody's forced organ donation was not a fan.
Agreed. So there we have it, folks. That is the Pixar sequel age, our largest age up until this point. Previously, they had maybe 5 or 6 movies. This one has 10. And then we're going to be moving into the new era or the new age. We'll reveal what we call it. Yeah, in the next episode. But this is an interesting one because those $1 billion box office, you're not going to see. At all, like not even close. So it'll be interesting to discuss.
So wait just a second. We still need to rank things. How would you rank this?
All right. So here is my list. Number 10, Cars 2. Number 3, Cars 3. Number 8, Incredibles 2. Number 7, The Good Dinosaur. Number 6, Toy Story 4. I bashed Toy Story 4, but wow, there are sure a lot of other films that I would prefer not to watch over Toy Story 4. Number 5, Monsters University. Number 4, Brave. Number 3, Finding Nemo. Number 2, Inside Out. And number 1, my beloved Coco.
All right. So starting from the bottom, working my way up, I've got Cars 2 as number 10. Number 9 is Toy Story 4. Number 8, Cars 3. Number 7, Incredibles 2. Number 6, The Good Dinosaur. Number 5, Monsters University. Number 4, Brave. Number 3, Finding Dory. Number 2, Inside Out. And just like you, my favorite of the sequel era is Coco.
Yay! Let us know your thoughts on the Pixar sequel age. I know people have really enjoyed our discussions that we're having on these different sequels and these eras. So it's been really fun. We're going to wrap it up with our last one. And then we have to have a new list, a series that we'll have to think of. If you have any ideas, send us a voicemail letting us know what our next thing should be for our nerdy couch discussions. I really like going, you know, how we've done, I don't know, like 8 or so episodes on just all these different eras. It's been really fun to talk about.
Yeah. If you want to leave a voicemail, just go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails or dial 406-646-6575.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. And until next time, we are the Rotoscopers. Ad break.
Ad break here.
And
we're back. Remember the how Gmail used to do that? No, it wasn't Gmail. It was Google Chat.
Oh.
GChat.
Yes.
And
it
we're
would
back.
Lose. And we're back. Yep. Good times. Good old times.
That was an era.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.